Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of the Growing Pains podcast. I'm your host, Allison LaRue. Thank you so much for being here with me today. Today's a very exciting episode because this is one that I've been wanting to record for a very long time, but I just always felt like I needed to do more or research more or know more before doing it. And this is your reminder, also a reminder to myself, that if you wait for things to be perfect, you're probably never going to do it. So do it now, and then you can always do it again later. You're always going to learn more. You're never going to know everything you want to know about a topic, but just do it now, because wherever you are now, you are still, you know more than someone else, and you're going to help them regardless. Someone's always going to know more than you, but there's also always people that know less than you about certain topics, so teach them. I do just want to say before we get into it, if you are listening on Apple and Spotify, make sure you follow the podcast, leave a rating, leave a review, and also go subscribe to my YouTube, because not only do I do a visual version of the podcast on here, I also post other videos. So if you're on YouTube, please subscribe, like, and comment. It does help me out a lot. You can follow me on Instagram at @TheAllisonLaRue. Follow my podcast and video production studio at The Studio Rue. But without further ado, we're going to be talking about ADHD. And I do just want to preface this by saying I am going to be talking about the difference in ADHD in women and men. I'm going to be talking about how ADHD specifically presents in women, because there is a massive difference between how it presents in women and men. And I feel like it's only ever talked about how it presents in men. But I do want to be as inclusive as possible, because I want to be inclusive. And whether you were assigned female or male at birth and you now identify as male or woman or whatever it may be, I want to be inclusive to you. So I just wanted to, you know, give a little precursor that I am going to be using the terms, you know, woman and man. If you don't identify with that or whatever it may be, just take what applies to you in your situation. Because unfortunately, this is a topic that, like, it does affect us differently depending on what sex we are. So I just wanted to say that because I do want to be as inclusive as possible. And in an ideal world, it would affect us all the same, but it doesn't. So take whatever applies to you in your situation and then leave the rest. Because I just want to help you. It helped me a lot. And everyone's situation is different, everyone's identity, like, I want this to be as helpful for you as possible, and I'm literally now just learning how it's affecting me, so, unfortunately, in a perfect world, I would know how this affects everybody, regardless of, you know, what sex they were assigned at birth, but I don't, and I just wanted to give that precursor, because I don't want anyone to feel excluded or left out. So when I say things like women and man, please just take what applies to you, what resonates with you, and leave the rest at the door, babes. So yeah, today we're going to be talking about ADHD. And I'm very excited because getting my ADHD diagnosis changed my life entirely in a way I could have never imagined. So first, I want to give a little backstory. I struggled my entire life with mental illness. I always, you know, I was diagnosed with anxiety and depression when I was like in middle school. And recently I made a video back in October on, you know, talking about going through a depressive episode. Go watch it if you want to. But I was really struggling with my mental health. And I was doing a lot of reflecting at that time in my life because I historically went through really high highs and really low lows and, you know, really depressive episodes and then really, like, massive highs. And through that, I was like, maybe I have bipolar disorder. I sort of avoided getting any sort of diagnosis for a really long time because I just convinced myself, now I'm fine. I dealt with my anxiety. I'm okay. I don't have a mental illness. Like, I was really trying to convince myself I wasn't mentally ill because I was really afraid to accept that I was, because there was this fear in my mind that if I accepted I was mentally ill, it would somehow make me like my family members who traumatized me. That's not the case. Your mental illness does not make you like anybody else who has that mental illness. Our mental illness is something that we have to deal with. And that is something I did want to briefly mention. Like, your mental illness is your responsibility. And I know that's scary and I know it's hard to accept, because it shouldn't be hard to accept and it shouldn't be scary. But it is scary because it's not talked about enough, and mental illness is very, like, stigmatized. But it doesn't need to be that way anymore. But you just have to take it into your own hands. And I know it can be scary to get a diagnosis and to really accept that you are mentally ill, but it doesn't have to be that way. And the scary thing should be going through life choosing to be in denial of it, because you're going to really traumatize yourself and really traumatize others. But your mental illness doesn't make you like anybody else. You don't have to worry about that. I was really afraid I would turn out like the people in my family who had certain mental illnesses and traumatized me. That's not the case. You know why? Because you're already aware of it. If you're scared that your mental illness is going to make you out to be, or if you're scared that your mental illness is going to put you in the same box and make you the same person as other people in your life who have that mental illness and have really traumatized you, I promise you that thought alone just shows you're not like them. Because the likeliness of them having those thoughts is very low. You know what I mean? The people who traumatized us often didn't really have much awareness about it, or didn't really care much about it, at least in my experience. They were in denial about their mental illness for a very long time, and they didn't care about how it affected themselves or how it affected others, because they would rather go through their life in denial and unaware and oblivious and hurt other people and themselves because of it than be responsible and make the hard decisions that is being an adult and go get a diagnosis and go get treated. Getting treated and getting help is very brave and very, you know, it's a big step. I just want to reiterate that like, you're doing great regardless, but it is your responsibility to take care of your mental health and to address your mental illness, because I think that's something that people don't say enough, because we tiptoe around mental illness a lot, but like, we don't need to be tiptoed around. Mentally ill people do not need to be tiptoed around. In fact, that just adds to the stigma even more. Like, we're good. You know what I'm saying? Well, I don't know. Maybe I'm just talking out of my ass. But I think it does need to be said that, like, your mental illness is your responsibility. Because at the end of the day, most of us are mentally ill in one way or another. A lot of people, like, bipolar disorder and ADHD and anxiety and depression is so common these days. And if we all walked around choosing to ignore our mental illness and not treat it because it's hard to accept it, we'd all be really fucked up at the end of the day, because we'd all be traumatizing each other. It's hard to accept it, but that's only because of the stigma around it. Sorry if that was harsh. It was out of a place of love, and also it was just maybe speaking to my family. So if that triggered you, I'm really sorry. That was just from my experiences. And maybe I shouldn't have said that, but I felt like it needed to be said, so I said it. Anyways, so back in October, I was like, maybe I have bipolar 2, or maybe I have OCD, or maybe whatever. I thought there was a plethora of mental illnesses that I had, so I decided, let's make a doctor's appointment. There was always a part of me in the back of my mind that thought, maybe I have ADHD, but it was significantly overshadowed by the part of me that was thinking, I think I have bipolar, I think I have OCD, maybe, like, something's really wrong. But also, my mom and my sister both have ADHD. They both have a lot of mental illness. Mental illness really runs in my family, and I sort of went my whole life being like, hell yes, the mental illness gene completely skipped me. I just got anxiety and depression. I didn't get any of that other shit. Lucky day for me. Until I realized, oh, that may not be the case, because most mental illnesses don't develop in women until their mid to late 20s and far beyond that. So I was like, gotcha. Maybe I'm wrong. So that played into me making a doctor's appointment, as well as the fact that I sort of saw my mom's mental health really, like, go downhill. She had ADHD her entire life and never got treated for it or never acknowledged it. And she started to experience significant memory loss in the past, like, 7 years. And she's only 55. And she, like, I was at the point where I'm like, you have early onset dementia. Like, this is really scary. But turns out she just had ADHD that went untreated and undiagnosed for her entire life, and her brain was working on overpower so much to the point that it started to shut down, and that really scared me. So I was like, I would rather go get this diagnosis or not and just know, that way I can take care of myself accordingly, because I don't want my brain to start shutting down at the age of 50 because I haven't been taking care of it. And I don't say that to scare anybody. It's just, we got to start taking better care of ourselves, and we have to start facing things, even if we're afraid of what might come up. Don't let fear keep you from, like, taking the proper care of yourself. I think that's sort of what I was trying to say in the first segment, where I think I just did it a bit too harsh of, like, yes, getting a diagnosis can be scary, but it doesn't need to be. Yes, taking care of your mental health can be scary and hard to accept, especially if you have experiences with people who are mentally ill, and getting a diagnosis might make you feel like you're like them, but it doesn't need to be that way. It does not need to be that way. Mental illness doesn't have to be this taboo topic. It's very common, and it would be a lot more normalized if we got diagnosed and if we started treating ourselves and we started taking care of ourselves. Taking care of your mental illness is just like going to the gym. It's a part of you. Your brain is a muscle. We have to exercise it. We have to take care of it, you know? And some of us just have a part of our brain that doesn't work the same way as other people's do. So if we're taking care of our brain in the way that everyone else is, but our brains work differently, that's not going to work for us. Just start viewing your mental illness as something different about yourself that you have to tend to. That's all. It does not need to be this horrible thing. It does not need to be something you're ashamed of. It doesn't need to be that way, but it does need to be something you address and you take care of. So please take care of it. Your mental illness is your responsibility. Just like other people's physical illness and physical diseases and physical ailments are their responsibility to take care of. Mental illnesses are just easier to ignore because it doesn't present physically until it does. And you don't want to wait until it does, is what I'm saying. So take care of it. Take care of yourself. You deserve to be taken care of, my love. You really, really do. So I went to the doctors, and I did not receive a diagnosis other than my diagnosis for ADHD. Granted, I didn't see a psychiatrist yet. And also, I'm fully aware of the privilege behind me saying, like, go take care of yourself, go get a diagnosis. That shit is not easy. It's hard as hell to get in with the doctor. It's very hard to get in with a psychiatrist, especially if you don't have insurance, especially if you don't have a doctor. It's not that easy, and I'm fully aware of that. So, regardless, take care of yourself in a way that you can right now until you are in a position where you can get a diagnosis. You know what I mean? Even if it's just listening to episodes like this, this is taking care of yourself. So I would also say avoid self-diagnosing. That's not helping anybody. Don't diagnose yourself until you can get a diagnosis from a doctor. But if you really do resonate with certain mental illnesses and you can't get a diagnosis, maybe start, you know, playing around with taking care of yourself in a way that would cater to that mental illness and just see how it works. But don't diagnose yourself. That's never a good idea. Anyways, I cannot even begin to explain to you the relief that I felt when I received that diagnosis. I felt like a ton of bricks was lifted off of my shoulders, and I didn't know why. My life drastically changed for the better when I got diagnosed with ADHD, and I didn't know why until I really sat and thought with it, but like, a lot of the ways that ADHD affected me were things that I hated about myself. And getting that diagnosis made me be like, oh, my brain just works differently. That's not a bad quality in me. It's literally a way that ADHD is affecting me. And one of the things that I'm mentioning or that I'm referring to is how I interact with people. I just want to remind you that, like, well, we'll get there. But I thought I was a bad person for a lot of these things. And I just want to remind you right now that if you are worried about being a bad person, there's a really high chance that you're not actually a bad person. Because bad people are not worried about being bad people. Good people worry about bad people because they care about being good. Bad people don't care if they're good or bad. They just are bad, and they don't care, and they don't think about being bad. They just are. So if you're thinking, am I a bad person? Do I, blah, blah, blah. No, you're not a bad person. You're a good person who wants to be good. Remind yourself that. Mental illness can convince you very quickly that you're a bad person, but you're not. You're a good person who is fearful of being bad a lot of the times because of our mental illness. So anyways, I struggle a lot with having conversations with people, especially a neurotypical person. I can have a conversation with a person who has ADHD or a neurodivergent person, but specifically a person with ADHD, for hours, and it will be fine because we both conversate the same ways. But I really, my whole life, thought I was a horrible listener. And when I started to talk to my friends about this, they were like, "You're not a bad listener at all." Granted, these are people who do have ADHD, so maybe a neurotypical person would think I'm a shit listener, but regardless, I always thought I was a bad listener because whenever I was having conversations with someone, rather than actively listening, I would think about the fact that I need to be listening to them. So rather than digesting what they're saying, my brain is like, you need to be focusing on what they're saying. Why aren't you listening? They're talking to you. You really need to be thinking about this. What am I going to say next? And then I would interrupt them because I would think about something that I really wanted to add to the conversation, but I knew if I didn't say it then and there, I would forget about it. So in my head, it's like, you need to be listening. Oh my God, we have something to say, but you can't interrupt them because you need to be listening. But if I don't interrupt them, if I don't tell them this, then I'll forget about what I'm going to say. What should I say after this? Because I forgot what I wanted to say because I didn't interrupt them. And what am I going to say? And then before you know it, they're done talking. They're waiting for you to respond. 5 minutes has passed and you didn't digest anything that they said. I hated myself for that. I beat myself up so much because I'm just a bad listener. Why can't I be a good listener? I'm trying so hard to be a good listener. Every conversation I went into, I was focused on being a good listener. And me focusing on being a good listener made me a bad listener. It's a part of having ADHD. That's just the facts. Everyone with ADHD that I've spoken to experiences this, especially women. And something that I've noticed is that I just naturally attract fellow ADHD people into my life or fellow neurodivergent people into my life. It doesn't happen often when someone in my life is completely neurotypical at all. That's not very common because it just naturally happens that way. My one really good friend, Casey, and I, we will sit down and just have a 6-hour conversation covering about 3,000 to 4,000 different topics and not ever question it. I never feel the need to apologize to her. I never feel the need to apologize for interrupting her. She never feels the need to apologize for interrupting me or steering the conversation in a different way because our brains work the same and we just know. We just have this understanding that this is how we interact. And I love it. I love those conversations. They are some of my favorite conversations to have with a person because we get each other. I'm not feeling the need to like tiptoe around a neurotypical person. And I'm not beating anybody up for being neurotypical at all. We just function very differently, and having conversations with them can be so exhausting because I am so aware of the fact that like they're likely judging me for the way that I am. You don't have to feel bad for the way that you act due to your ADHD. That's one thing I want to touch on, is like your ADHD does not need to be something that holds you back. View it as a superpower because holy shit, the way our brain works is really cool. It's very interesting that most neurodivergent people, most people with ADHD are some of the most brilliant creatives ever because the way our brain works is incredible. We aren't typically the most logical people, but we are very creative, and that is amazing. It also really affects the way that I run my business. And moving forward, if I ever get another business coach, which I likely will, it will be someone who has ADHD. And that's honestly hard for me to say because I've worked with a couple of business coaches, and my most recent one I adored. And I love the way we work together, but I could never understand why the strategies that other people were, you know, talking about or suggesting to me or anything, I couldn't understand why it wouldn't work for me. I couldn't understand why I couldn't do it. I literally thought something was wrong with me. There were so many times that I thought about quitting my business because I was like, I'm not cut out for this. I can't do this. It doesn't work for me. What's wrong with me? Nothing was wrong with me. I just wasn't doing business strategies, and I wasn't doing business the way that it worked for me. As someone who has ADHD, I was operating my business through the lens of a neurotypical person, and that wasn't working for me as a neurodivergent person. It wasn't cutting it. So moving forward, when I get another business coach, or if I get a business partner, or I work with someone, or whatever, it needs to be someone who their brain works the same way as mine does, because I was trying to force myself into a box that I couldn't fit in, and it wasn't working, and I'd get burnt out, and I'd want to quit, and I literally took a year off of social media because of the strategies that people were talking about, and the posting strategies, and the content creation strategies, and the schedules, and the pillars, and it drained me. And it wasn't until I came back and I started creating and posting in a way that felt good to me, that didn't have a lot of structure and that just allowed me to be creative, I'm so consistent with it now because I enjoy it and it works for me. And it's not pushing against the way my brain works. It's going with it. Your life will change when you stop trying to fight your ADHD and you just go with it. I have never felt so clear and so good mentally in my life. That's why I feel so good, because I got my diagnosis for ADHD and then I stopped trying to fight it. I started working with it and I started accepting, okay, my brain just works differently. Obviously, living in a world that was shaped by neurotypical people, I'm going to have to do things differently. Stop trying to fight that. It's beautiful to do things differently. I would much rather see someone do something different in a way that works for them than try to fight themselves and do something in a way that everyone says you should be doing it that just doesn't work for you. You're going to give up. You're going to give up. And I don't want you to give up, because people with ADHD have so much to bring to the table. We have the best creative ideas ever. And I don't want you to give up because the structure of neurotypical people doesn't work for you. Find a way that does work for you. And if you're in business, please talk to me. Like, I would love to help you out and help you find ways, just as a friend, that you can, like, make things work. Because we don't function the same way. Our brains are different. Stop trying to make your brain work in a way that a neurotypical person does, because it's never going to do that. Another thing, I have to have background noise on when I'm working. I always have... My favorites are French ambiance, like French cafe ambiance. I love that. I love to feel like I'm in Paris and I'm just working away. Coffee shop ambiance is great. I like, right now, cozy Christmas reading nook ambiance. It's like Christmas music and a little bit of snowfall and a fireplace. Love that. Sometimes it's just a podcast. Sometimes it's just music, but regardless, I always have to have background noise on when I'm doing anything, because otherwise my brain will fill the silence, so I can't have silence. Tried it, just doesn't work for me. My brain doesn't work that well. Except it's very interesting, because growing up in school, there's a certain noise that just will make me go insane. I think it's overstimulating. In school, if everyone was talking, I couldn't do anything, but if it was completely silent, I couldn't do anything either. And that was confusing, because I was like, so I need noise, but it can't be too much noise, because I'll get overstimulated and I'll want to, you know, start crying in the middle of class. But if it's too quiet, then I don't know what's happening in my head. Too much is happening. So that's interesting. Too much noise will freak me out, and too much silence will freak me out, and I'll get overstimulated either way. But keep that in mind. The other thing is, when I'm watching TV, or, you know, a movie or a YouTube video or whatever, I have to be doing something else. I was always on my phone when I was trying to watch TV, and that just was like, at first it made me focus really well until I'd get on TikTok and then I couldn't do it. What's helped me a lot to focus on the TV show or movie or whatever I'm watching is to knit while I'm doing it. I also do this when I'm on the phone with my friends, because I am not thinking about, I'm not focused on, I need to be listening, I need to be paying attention to the show, I need to listen to what they're saying. Instead, I'm focused on, okay, I'm knitting, and I'm listening to them. My brain's not on overdrive thinking about how I need to be listening. My brain's thinking about, okay, I'm knitting, and listening to what they're saying at the same time. I've had some of the best conversations of my life, and I've digested shows in a way that I never had before due to that. Another thing, people always say, oh, when you're on the treadmill or when you're doing cardio or whatever, put on a YouTube video or put on a Netflix show or whatever. It'll make time go by so fast. No, it won't, because I can't get invested in a show unless I'm doing something else. And walking, like, it doesn't feel like I'm doing anything. I could, granted, bring my knitting needles and knit while I'm watching a show, but instead I read, because I have to be fully focused on what I'm reading on the treadmill. And that makes time go very fast. So try it out. Another thing, so there's this thing called RSD, which I recently learned about. A friend who has ADHD taught me about it, and RSD stands for rejection sensitivity dysphoria, and essentially it is very common in people who have ADHD. Not everyone who has ADHD experiences this, but it's very common, especially in women with ADHD, and it's a fear of rejection. This can show up in a lot of different ways for different people, but essentially at the root of it, it's a fear of rejection. The way this showed up for me, I went my whole life always thinking like my friends secretly hated me. I would think anytime I left a room, my friends would be talking shit about me. Everyone was talking badly about me. Everybody hated me. It was just something that I always thought, and I never knew why. I could have really great friends, and I would think they hate me. I could have a partner and I'd think they'd hate me. I know they talk bad about me with their friends. I know they hate me. And that was stemming from my RSD, stemming from a fear of rejection. Another thing was I've never met anyone who also experiences it in this way, but I always felt like nobody would recognize me. I felt like I could see someone I knew for a very long time and then I just hadn't seen in a couple of years and I was like, they won't recognize me. I remember one time I was in a Walmart or Target or something and I saw one of my fifth grade teachers and I didn't even bother saying hi because I was like, she won't recognize me. I've changed so much. And she came up to me and she was like, hey, Allison. And I was like, you know who I am? Another time recently was a guy off of a dating app. And I never say hi to people when I see them in person off of dating apps because I'm like, they don't know who I am. They don't know what I look like. And he was like, hey, Allison. And I was like, what? It's even happened to me with people I went to high school with my entire life. I would see them in public and I'm like, they don't know who I am. I just always felt like invisible to people. But I think it was my brain doing that. I was like, they don't know who I am because if they don't know me, and if I'm preparing myself for the fact that they don't know me, the rejection that happens won't hurt because I didn't think they knew me to begin with. Even just like going my whole entire high school experience, I thought nobody knew me in high school at all. And then after, like, my friends and I will be talking, they were like, yeah, you were pretty popular in middle school. Like, we always knew about you. We went to different middle schools. And I was like, no, I wasn't popular at all. I went my whole life thinking nobody knew me because my brain was trying to protect me from the rejection that would come if I thought they knew me and then they didn't. Crazy. I can link an article. If you guys want it, let me know, send me a DM and then I'll post it, or I'll put it, if I remember, I'll put it in the description of this episode, but an article in RSD that changed my life. I don't know a ton about it to talk about, like, all of the ways it can affect people. Those are just the ways that it affected me, but I've always had a fear of rejection. It affected me a lot when dating. I didn't date at all for a very long time because I was afraid I'd get rejected if I did. Fear of rejection is very strong, and it's directly correlated with RSD, and it's also very closely correlated with ADHD, so keep that in mind. Another thing that really affected me, and this is something that came into play a lot with my friendships because it affected other people there, but as someone with ADHD, I really struggle with forgetting things, and the best way I can explain it is out of sight, out of mind. If it's not directly in front of me, I'm going to forget about it. And a majority of my friendships are long-distance friendships, and this is really difficult because unless I see something about them on social media or get a text from them or whatever, I will forget that I need to nurture that friendship. And it sounds horrible to be like, I forgot about you. Obviously, I didn't completely forget about your existence. I just forget that I need to reach out to you. And I forget that that's something that I want to do. And that sounds really horrible, but if you're someone who is neurodivergent, you will understand that. And I know that. It's hard. Like, I literally need to create a list of people I need to reach out to, and even my own family. Like, I can go a month without talking to them because I just forget about it, and time works differently. Sorry, I got cut off, but time just works differently for me, so I'll forget to reach out to people that I love, forget to do things. Like, I have to have a to-do list at all times, because otherwise I will completely forget about things that I need to do. The amount of lists in my phone, ridiculous. But I have learned that writing down actual to-do lists on a piece of paper has proven to be a lot helpful because I'm way more likely to remember something if I write it down versus if I just type it. So I recommend that. That helped me a lot in school with studying. I had to write things down 3 times to remember it. So yeah, if I, like, out of sight, out of mind, if it's not directly in front of me, I will forget to do it, or I will forget to reach out to my friends. It's just, it's not great. I need to speed through this because it's already been 30 minutes. Another popular thing, or another common thing, not popular, is mood swings. I didn't realize this was something that came with ADHD, but it's very common for people with ADHD to think, especially in women, it's very common for them to think they also have a mood disorder, due to just, like, the way our mood can easily change if we are overstimulated, if we, like, if I get overstimulated too quickly, I, like, borderline have a panic attack, and I get really irritable, and just like a lot can change within my mood just because this light is too bright and there's too many noises happening and there's too many people around me. Like, I can go from 0 to 100. Luckily, I've learned how to regulate that and to like just bring myself back down to earth and fix my overstimulation. But that's another example of like, it's your responsibility to know how to take care of your mental illness. And I hate saying that, like, mental illness. It sounds like something's horribly wrong with me. Once again, I've really learned to, like, appreciate my ADHD and the way it makes me work. But difficult. Let me say that. It's been difficult. And the whole overstimulation thing can get rough. And especially if you're around people who don't get it. So my advice is to find people who, one, also have ADHD or who are also neurodivergent. Surround yourself with people who understand you, and if they aren't neurodivergent, surround yourself with people who are open-minded and at least willing to learn. But something that my one therapist told me that really stuck out to me is, like, I remember it was when I was in my last relationship, and he was just so, like, a brick wall when it came to me trying to explain my anxiety to him, because he was the typical, like, just calm down, why are you so upset, what are you anxious about, kid, I don't know. I'm trying to calm down. He just didn't get it. And my therapist told me, Allison, trying to make someone understand your mental illness who isn't mentally ill is like trying to teach a dog how to talk. They can't get it. We can't understand it. You can try your best to be understanding and you can try your best to be sympathetic, but it is truly, at the end of the day, you will never make someone understand your mental illness if they don't have it. Someone who doesn't experience anxiety will literally never understand it. Someone who doesn't have ADHD will never understand the way you are and why you're that way. However, they can try their best to be understanding, and they can listen to you, and they can learn to work with you, and they can be sympathetic, and they can be there for you, but it's unrealistic to think they need to understand me. They're not going to understand you at the end of the day. You have to understand yourself. And once you really understand yourself and why you work the way you do and how to take care of yourself, you don't feel that need to make other people understand you. That was a big one for me. I went my whole life just wishing people understood me. How do you expect people to understand you if you don't even understand yourself? It doesn't work that way. So getting this diagnosis really filled that hole for me of, like, I need people to understand me. I literally went all my life up until a few months ago wishing desperately that people would understand me. And it wasn't until I got diagnosed with ADHD and I understood myself on a deeper level that went away. Work to understand yourself, and the need for other people to understand you will go away, because people aren't going to understand you. Nobody can understand you besides yourself. But also, people with ADHD or similar mental illnesses to you will understand the way you work on a deeper level than someone who doesn't share that. So keep that in mind. But another thing is, well, going off of that, roller coasters of emotions. I would go through like a week of being really motivated and then a week of being so exhausted and burnt out. And it would just be like up and down and like crashing and then soaring and crashing and soaring. And it was exhausting. And I wish I had a tangible tip. I don't know what changed, because I will say this week I'm more tired than I was last week, but also being a woman or being someone who has female reproductive organs, bitch, the menstrual cycle is real and it will affect you on a deeper level, and that's just another thing we have to take into account. Like, I don't want to worry about my cycle. Like, what? It's just so annoying. It doesn't need to be annoying. It's only annoying me right now because I just started to understand, like, the way my ADHD works and how it affects me on a weekly basis. And then to come into play, it's like, okay, but you're actually about to be, like, menstruating, so you are really tired this week, just letting you know. So, that's one thing. Anyways, sorry. But I will say, cycle syncing and learning about your cycle and how it affects you and working with it, and then also, like, there's just so many damn things we have to learn about. But sometimes I wish I, like, didn't know about any of it, but I am glad I do, because I've felt so much better. Just the awareness around the fact that this is something that happens to me has changed the roller coaster for me, because I felt so good for so many weeks on end until I was about to get my period right now. And I still feel good, but I am just a bit more tired than I was in the previous weeks. just being aware of it and allowing yourself to rest throughout the day, even if you feel good. You don't have to get everything done today. Even if you feel like you can, you don't have to, because guess what? Then next week, after a week of doing everything nonstop, you'll crash. So change the way you structure your days to match your ADHD, because I would go a whole week of being so motivated and getting everything done and working 8 hours a day when I didn't have to do that, to next week laying on my couch for 8 hours a day because I was so exhausted from the week prior, and then I would just be stuck in this cycle. Since getting my diagnosis and learning this about myself, I will have like 4 hours out of the day that I work. I will have at least an hour a day to exercise, and then I will have a lot of me time. I will make sure I have time to make my meals, and I structure my days around myself in a way that works for me. That way I have motivation, and then I also have rest. And I go through that sort of roller coaster in my day, but it's not a roller coaster because it's planned almost. Rather than having a week of motivation and a week of exhaustion, which just isn't productive and it doesn't work, you do that in one day where you're very motivated and then you let yourself rest so you can avoid that exhaustion and you can avoid that crash and burn. I highly recommend it. Another thing is chasing dopamine. This is something that people with ADHD do a lot. We chase dopamine, we chase stimulation, and this can be a very slippery slope. I always want to change. How do I even want to word this? A person with ADHD chasing dopamine can be very slippery because it can lead to addiction very quickly. We have a very like addictive personality because if something gives us dopamine, we want more of it. If something stimulates us, we want more of it until it overstimulates us and then we're like, okay, I'm done. But I always thought addiction ran in my family until I realized the people who struggled with addiction just have ADHD. Addiction doesn't run in my family. Untreated ADHD that then leads to addiction because it was untreated runs in my family. That's something to think about, because that was very true for me. So what ways can this lead to addiction? Shopping is a big one. People with ADHD overspend a lot because the dopamine rush that comes from buying something new, like it feels really good and then it'll go away. And the more you do it, the quicker it goes away. So then it'll lead to a shopping addiction and a spending addiction very quickly. Another thing is drugs and substances. This is very obvious. The dopamine rush that comes from doing drugs or getting drunk or whatever. Very, very much so. But also on the opposite end, people like, I had a very hard time with my relationship with marijuana because it would like quiet my mind and nothing really did that. So it was really nice to be like, oh wow, things are kind of quiet for a minute. And I got sort of addicted to that feeling. So even though like cannabis itself isn't addictive, I was addicted to it because of the way it made me feel. Also your relationship with food, chasing dopamine and comfort and all of these things through eating, can be a very slippery slope, and people with ADHD can have a really hard time with our relationship with food. On the other end, people with ADHD can also really struggle to remember to eat because out of sight, out of mind. So you either have our relationship with food is typically very complicated, whether you're overeating or you're undereating. It can be either way. Another thing was with chasing dopamine is after I sort of address my, you know, dependency on marijuana and I address my relationship with food and I addressed all of the other ways I chase dopamine, I was constantly trying to change things about my life because I was chasing dopamine. I was constantly trying to move. I was constantly trying to go on trips. I was constantly changing my style. I was constantly rearranging my room. Like, small or big changes, I was constantly changing things because I was chasing dopamine. And these big changes, accompanied by depressive episodes that I would get, led me to believe I have bipolar because I thought that these were manic phases that I was experiencing. Some weird thing just happened with my lip. The constant changes that I would make when I would sort of look back and reflect, I was like, that was a manic episode. It wasn't. It was me chasing dopamine. It was my ADHD. So this is one of the ways that, beyond just the mood swings that come with overstimulation, it's another reason why people with ADHD can often think they have bipolar disorder or any mood disorder, and a lot of times get misdiagnosed. People get misdiagnosed for a lot of other things when it's really just ADHD, and that's crazy to think about. So keep that in mind. just keep that in mind and address it. And that's why, another reason why I highly recommend going to the doctor, if you have a slight, like, inkling that you might have ADHD, if you can and if it's available to you, go get a diagnosis or go get told that that's not it. That way you can address things accordingly. Because if it is ADHD, then you know what you need to do. And if it isn't ADHD, then you know there isn't another issue there that you need to address when it comes to your spending problems or your relationship with food or your constant change or whatever. So, I think that's all that I wanted to say. I just want to say quickly some things that have helped me. To-do lists, like I said, writing them down, very helpful. Putting sticky notes everywhere. I will have a pile of sticky notes all throughout my house in every room. That way, if I get an idea, I'll write it down quickly and I don't lose that into the oblivion that will never come back. Noise-canceling headphones, very important for me because I get overstimulated very easily. Like, I have my headphones in everywhere I go. If I'm in the grocery store, people always think I'm weird for this. If I go to the grocery store, if I'm working in a coffee shop, if I'm in a bookstore, if I'm in public, anywhere, I have my headphones on. I was previously using just the AirPod Pros, which are the noise canceling ones. I still use those from time to time, but they hurt my ears. So I have the Bose. I always said Sony, but they're Bose. Quiet Comfort 45s. They're great. Not as noise canceling as the AirPods, I will say, but they still get the job done. And I will just play like a podcast or something in it. So that way it's canceling all the noise out from the world around me that would overstimulate me, but I still have a noise playing. So that way I don't freak out again. Knitting, keeping myself occupied while I'm watching things has really helped. And also just listening to myself, resting when I need it, not pushing against it, trusting, like, if I'm not enjoying something, if something doesn't feel good to me, that there's another way I can do this that will feel good to me. And I owe it to myself to find a way to do things that feel good for me and that work for me. Why am I continuing to do this if it doesn't work? Even with exercising, that's another thing I realized about myself is, I forgot a few things. Hobbies. People with ADHD will have this thing where we will pick up a hobby and be really interested in it for 2 weeks or 2 months, and then we'll sit it down and never do it again. Partially, it's the out of sight, out of mind thing, and others chasing dopamine. We found a new thing that we like. I just forgot about the things I wanted to say. So I was talking about hobbies, working out. I will, like, find a workout or a way to move my body that I really like, and I'll do it every second of every day, and then I'll get tired of it. So for a while there, it was weightlifting. For a while there, I was running. I loved the Stairmaster. Then I was doing hot yoga, and I did hot yoga so much to the point that I haven't went in a really long time, even though I'm paying a ridiculous amount of money for my membership, because I'm bored of it. So now I'm just walking. Just go with it. Trust yourself. But also, like, maybe in the future, I will try to implement different things, like walking one day, doing yoga one day, doing this the other day, to keep my mind stimulated, and that way I don't get tired of everything I like. But I also do that with food. I'll pick a food that I really like, and then I'll only eat that for every meal for about 3 weeks until I get tired of it. I went through a phase of acai bowls. I went through a phase of this turkey burrito that I really liked. I went through the phase with a chicken wrap. I went through the phase of spaghetti squash, where it's like, that's all I'll eat, and then I'll get tired of it, and then I can't eat it for 6 months. So, that's that. But just listen to yourself, and also, like, learn to listen to yourself and know how to give yourself what you need when you need it, and how to change things about your life that fit your life and your brain better, because your brain works differently, and you can't expect the way that neurotypical people live to work for you as a neurodivergent person. So just change things, but also learn, like, when you need to provide some structure, because okay, we need this, I mean, like, learn how to give yourself what you need in a way that feels good to you, you know, because we do need a little bit of structure, and we do need to keep ourselves accountable so that we don't always burn out and that we don't always overdo things to the point where we hate it. Like, let's find a way to shift some things around and fix some things. All in all, my diagnosis has helped me a lot. I understand myself so much. It was so validating to just have someone tell me, like, there's a reason why you do these things, because I felt like a shitty person. I felt crazy. I felt like a bad person. I just felt awful about myself because of the way ADHD affected me, because I didn't know it was my ADHD. So getting that diagnosis really was so validating, and it changed my life entirely. And even just getting the diagnosis without making any changes myself changed my life entirely. And I think I'll make another episode, since this is getting so long, I'll make another episode talking about medication. I am not currently medicated. It's not the route I want to go with first. I want to go the holistic approach first. I've heard a lot of great things about mushroom complexes and microdosing and lion's mane and just like herbs and plants and things like that. So I am going that route first. I just ordered a microdosing coffee, so I will let you guys know how I feel about that. Another thing that I've heard has really affected or really changed the way it shows up and, you know, makes you feel better is changing your diet. So I'm currently cutting out gluten because I've heard that really messes with people who have ADHD, and just cutting out gluten alone can make people feel the same way that Adderall would make them feel. So try things out, play with it, have fun with it, just play around with it. If you want to get medicated, do it, but also know there are other options out there that maybe you want to consider trying beforehand. I'm not against medication at all, but it's a lot on your mental health to go down that road of like, it's going to take a while to find a medication that works right for you and a dosage that works right for you. So maybe try a natural approach first, but also if you feel like that's what you want to do, then do it. But also know that like, there's nothing wrong with you, you know? This isn't something that needs to be fixed. If it's prohibiting the way you show up and it's really affecting you in a bad way, then obviously, like, address those areas of your life. But this isn't something that we're trying to get rid of, more so how to learn to work with it and how to learn to make it fit our lifestyle. So that's all. I'm leaving you there. It's been 46 minutes. I'm sweating my ass off and I need to go eat, but I love you guys. Please, please, please take care of yourself and validate yourself. And if you can, and if this resonated with you, talk to people about it. Go to the doctor if it's available for you. Talk to a therapist if it's available for you. But know there's nothing about you that needs to be fixed because of your ADHD. You're not a bad person. You are just neurodivergent and you work differently. But please give this video a thumbs up if you're watching on YouTube. Subscribe to my YouTube. Follow my Instagram at TheAllisonLarue. Go check out my YouTube because I'm going to post a video about my foster puppy that I'm getting in 5 hours. I don't know anything about her besides her name is Twinkie and she's 7 months old and 10 pounds. And that's all I know. So yeah. I love you, friends. Please take care of yourself. Have a great rest of your day. You deserve healthy love. I love you. Bye.